Welcome to the January 24th, 2024 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. This is a preliminary agenda and is subject to change. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 1:02. Does that say 2?
Yes.
Pledge of Allegiance. It's over in Rotary. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Mark didn't want us pledging allegiance to him.
Mark.
Make a motion to approve, I'll accept a motion to approve the agenda.
I propose that we approve the agenda with some changes. First, no financial report today.
Correct.
Is reflected.
Oh, right.
And no public comment period.
At the end.
At,
right.
Well, this actually said, okay, at the end, none at the end.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Okay. Thank you for making those changes. Do I have a second?
Okay, and I'll second that with the amendment.
Any further discussion?
Nope.
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Go on to public comment period. Who wants to talk first?
I'm Greg.
Okay, state your name.
I'm Noelle Hunter. I've been here before.
Yep.
Last night, probably spent several hours, because the more I was reading through stuff, the more angry I was getting as I discovered stuff. And I know time is limited, and there's other people who want to speak. So, put in bullet form, but I thought that was still a little bit too long. Initially, I was just more concerned about the marina. And the more I've dug into things, the scarier it has become for me as not only a vote member, but as a taxpayer of the port. And I'm seeing things that really concern me. One of the things that I had noticed is we as the Royal We as the marina, have laid off 4 people in the last couple of years.
And could you say that again?
Laid off 4 people. You terminated 4 contracts. And when I look through that, I don't know if you guys have fuzzy accounting. I don't know what's going on with that. But how you paid out the severance on 2, explain severance. Okay, makes sense. I don't know how you got the numbers. But it is what it is. But the other 2, it's adjusted as hourly. And controller salary. To me, this is fuzzy math, and they're large amounts, and it's a way to hide something, in my opinion. And that concerns me, and it draws attention. So I look at that. Then I look at the fact that you've spent almost $200,000 on consulting fees that have gone nowhere, but you've got properties that are dilapidated. This makes me really angry, and I think as a taxpayer, I want to let other port taxpayers know what's going on, because I think light is a great disinfectant. Something is amiss here. It doesn't look right, and I'm not understanding. Then I also want to talk about real fast, there's a lot more, about what is going on with the live aboards. I'm still unbelievably mad with Ray, but I feel like these live aboards are being pushed out, and I don't think you guys understand what service they do. We have a theft issue. You know, one of Brita's boats got stolen, I believe, this last year with the sailing club. Mm-hmm. And we do have theft, and all you guys are doing is making it where we don't have extra eyes. I think the theft is going to get worse. And I don't think you realize those live aboards are also ambassadors for our guests that come out of town. They are helpful. They they're his eyes. They're part of the community, and you guys are pushing them out, and it pisses me off about how you guys are handling this. I think those are the two things, or there's a list of other things, but those are the two things that are just rubbing me in such a way right now that if these things aren't addressed, to be honest, I have nothing else better to do with my life since my surgery but sit home and make phone calls. Because when elections come, I want people to know we made you aware of this, when we made you guys aware of this, because after you bilk the voters with what you're doing, and not even being open on Sunday, taking more and more money to pay payroll, you're gonna have to go to the taxpayers because you're gonna end up breaking us. And then I want the taxpayers to know what's going on and the burden that we've been shouldering for a long time. And I think there's just poor management at the court right now. And we're gonna go right back to where we were sued just a few years ago. And it's gonna be on the commissioner's hands at this point. And I don't want to repeat. And so that's where I'm at. Thank you.
Can you submit your extra comments in writing to the staff, please?
Do you have that in writing?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
You don't want to?
I need
that's
to refine this a lot more because, like I said, I was angry type.
Okay. So when you get a chance to.
And I'm just mad.
Okay. When you get a chance to, though.
At point, those are the two things that are just rubbing me the most. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next? Mark?
Sure. I want to put in a plug for the North Kitsap United meeting that will be here at the Village Green tonight, 6:30. There's been over $200,000 spent looking at one of the proposed sites, the area up there, corner of Bond Road and Port Gamble Road, the southeast corner of the Harris Park. Looking at that property, try to figure out if there's wetlands, it would be a problem, streams, aquifer recharge, potential runoff into the bay. So that's the principal focus, is to feed back to the county the results of that study. In preparation for that study, we went out, there was six of us that went out doorbelling in the Gamblewood community, just inviting people to come to the meeting, making them aware of it. And you know, you hear a lot of social media being opposed to any kind of activity out there. Let me tell you that the three teams covered nearly 100 houses, homes, and because it was a Saturday, an awful lot of folks were home, and we got to talk to them. Overwhelming support for the project. Sure, there were concerns. People asked about, what are you going to do about traffic? What about potential homeless people around the YMCA? But overall, despite what you hear on the social media, people out here want to have active recreation opportunities, sports fields, YMCA with a pool, those kinds of things. They want them in our neighborhood. And of course, I've come to the meeting tonight to hear more about it, and look forward to the court support as well as the support of the whole community to get this project approved as part of the comprehensive plans look to the next 20 years.
What time is that?
6:30.
Okay. Yeah, it's just right to me, right across.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks.
KCAC or
who's next?
Rainier is presenting the environmental studies.
Does anybody else have any public comment? Art?
Art. Hey. I'm Art Hammond. For a few more days, I'll live in the Port of Kingston. But I'll have you know that you have forced us out. And I point at you, Greg. And I also point at you, the
Can you please make sure that you address your public comments to the commission and not the staff?
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm saying you, the commissioners, have allowed him to force us out. This is my home. I grew up in this community. I've been here longer than many of you, say a few. And we can no longer afford to stay in our home, the boat that we own, because you have systematically raised the rates and raised rates against specifically liveaboards and created a hostile environment towards liveaboards. That is not okay. And it's too late for me, but it's not too late for other people. And you guys should make some changes in that. It's not acceptable to force people out of their home because you want to make a buck. And then you take that money and you don't put it into the maintenance of the facility in a way that keeps it going. You're blowing money on pet projects and empire building, and it's not okay. And for a long time, I didn't say anything because I didn't want to get kicked out of Marina, and I thought that's exactly what happened. Well, you know what? It's too late now, so here I am. I'm saying something. You forced us out of our home. Something I worked for my whole life. And it's unacceptable. And it's wrong. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Art. Who's next? As we aren't having a public comment period at the end, this is the only time to do public comment. Greg, you have something to say?
Sure. Yeah, Greg Wright. I guess in my research that I've been doing, because I told y'all I wanted to figure out what is happening at the port. I couldn't come to a port meeting and call the three of you on task if I didn't take the time to research what y'all do. And so I have read volumes, volumes and volumes. I forget the name of the recent thing I read from the state. It was about how you guys do your jobs. But it brought me back to what these guys were having a problem with. I think that the problem that I have is that I don't and I can't find anything that tells me why you're doing what you're doing, why you spent $192,000 on the idea of a hotel or some sort of structure, why we spent $250,000 with basically no benefit to the port. So then I changed my thinking and I went, okay, sit on the other side, $192,000, you all want to do something that's going to benefit the community, building a hotel or a rental space or condos or whatever it is that you have in your minds. We'll say that's 100% effective, 100% good monetarily, you're making money. What are you doing with the money? Yeah, I hear you want to make more money for the port, but what are you doing for the port? What are the capital expenditures? We talked about, you know, improving the port over the long term, and I talked about with Greg about progressive maintenance, where rather than bite a $10 million project in one funding, maybe you can do a $1 million project over 10 years, making it a $10 million project. The other part is what Noel brought up, which is the Hill House. It is woefully dilapidated. And it's I think, Laura, you've been here how many years?
Long time.
Ten as a commissioner?
No, six.
Commissioner.
Six.
Six, okay. We've owned that property a long time. And why have we let it get the way it is? And what's our plan for it? Do we have a plan? And I think that that is the frustration of the community, is we're seeing a lot of money being spent with, there's nothing that tells me what is going to happen. When we look out and we see a dilapidated building, 192 grand, would have turned that building into a beautiful home. So, as I've said in the past, I never come to you with the problem without a solution. I'm working on the solution. I told Greg yesterday, thank you, I got those measurements. I am drawing pictures for an RV park on the Toth properties and the Hill properties. I think the yacht club needs to be taken where from where they are to the Hill property. I think that would be a good use, not only for the community, but for the business side of things, because then you could turn that yacht club into a money-making restaurant that I'm sure you could get $5,000, $6,000 a month off of rather than two, which is, you know, we know at the yacht club that our rents are going to go up, but we're stuck. We can't grow. We're limited on size. So I would like to ask you to put your efforts not into a pie-in-the-sky hotel idea of which we can't afford a $20 million bond, but look at the properties we already own, address the issues of concern, which is overcrowding at the yacht club and a dilapidated building and dock setup. Work with people that know the business, like Craig Powell, who builds docks for a living and does breakwaters and does shoreline management and all of these things that can help you get to the place where we are, where we have a beautiful waterfront that is a moneymaker for the port, because that's what I think we all here want, is not only a beautiful port, but a well-run port. And I think the questions of where did $250,000 go are just an outstanding question for all of us. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Clint, there's a seat up front.
I'm going to have to leave soon.
Okay. Any more public comment? Okay, seeing that there is none.
This is Sean on the phone. Can I just say
Sean? Sean, go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I appreciate the folks that have spoken out. I agree with all of them, and I would really like to support Greg's idea there and see some further investigation into that.
Is that it?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, we're going to move on to the consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. We're going to approve the November 15th, 2023 work session meeting minutes, approve the November 15th, 2023 regular meeting minutes, approve the November 21st, 2023 work session minutes, approve the November 28th, 2023 work session minutes, approve January 23rd, 2024 work session minutes, and approve the December 2023 warrants in the amount of $29,488.29 and the EFT payments of $117,312.49. Has the commission had a chance to look these over?
I have.
Okay.
I have too.
I accept a motion.
I so move.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Go on to the action items. Action item A, approve resolution 2024-12401, resolution directing the executive director to amend contract for architectural services for commercial development. Greg?
Staff is asking commission for approval to extend the contract to Winslow Architects for the commercial development for not to exceed an amount of $140,000. We've approved up to $128,000 currently. And this would bring us through, we have some future work that we need to get done, including we're amending the rendering so that the actual landscape is going to be more of a natural. We're not going to, the way the current renderings have it is that there would be a $2 million landscaping program. So we said, hey, we want to have this represented so that the landscaping represents what we're kind of currently going to be, what we'd actually have funded potentially as a whole project. And then the other thing that we're going to do is we're going over all of the construction documents with Winslow Architects as well as a construction manager to get a much more detailed, hopefully, rough order of magnitude of costs. So anyway, that's so the request is for not to exceed amount total of $140,000.
Does this have rolled into it the bathrooms?
No, bathroom is a separate one. That's the next
Okay, resolution. Thank you.
and we treat them as two separate projects. The restroom is funded in large part through a grant from Recreation Conservation Office.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So do I have a motion?
So moved.
Now, second half.
Any further discussion or questions by the commission?
No.
No, I don't.
I appreciate you going over this with us yesterday, Greg, and introducing us to it and telling us the purpose, and I really appreciated that advance. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 Going on to resolution number 2024-12402, directing the executive director to amend contract for architectural services for the restroom.
Similar type situation, so we have the restroom. I'd like to expand the contract to a not to exceed amount of $39,900. We may actually ask them to do some work on the retrofit of the existing restroom to see if we could repurpose that for another use.
Mm-hmm.
But that scope of work is yet to be determined. It would be good if that building kind of matches the new restroom design. So that's what the request is for, is to amend the architectural services for the restroom at $39,900.
So it's just amending it by $5,000, correct?
Roughly $40,000.
Yeah.
$49.53.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So do I have a motion?
So I'll move that we approve resolution 2024-01-24-002 for architectural services for the restroom.
I second that motion.
Any discussion?
No.
No. All in favor?
I did have one question.
Go ahead.
The repurposing, which isn't included in this, do you have any estimate of what that would run?
No.
Is that after the fact?
Mm-hmm.
Once they get everything completed on the
yeah.
retrofit for the new one?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then they'll go into that. Is there any ideas of the possibilities for that?
Mm-hmm. To be determined, because one of the other issues we have is that the power source for the whole marina is right there. Ultimately, we'll probably look at moving the power underground, putting a vault in underground, rather than having it above ground where it's accessible for vandalism, that kind of thing, because it's pretty critical to the whole operation of the marina. And then if there's something that we can do that is not super expensive, but retrofits that existing facility, then it would be, you know, we probably need to go have an architect go through that and take a look at it. Might be just cladding it and having similar type of finishes on it, but we're going to have to do something in terms of separating out the power too, so that it's segregated from the actual building.
Power and the water, as I understand, the
yeah.
a lot of the water comes into that building as well. It's
yeah, we'll have to be decommissioned.
Not the best.
No.
Okay.
But it's a building from the 50s, as I understand, so.
That's why power and water were mixed in the same building.
Yeah, I think so. And plus, you know, for, you know, protection purposes for valves and things like that, you know, so they don't freeze.
Mm-hmm.
As some of us were aware of freezing activities when it got down to 10 this year, which wasn't so good, but, you know, that in and of itself is a testament to that building and the past.
Okay, any further discussion?
Nope.
So all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Go on to number 7, which is discussion items. There's 3 different discussion items. The first one is port responses to previous claims. The second one is North Kitsap United. And the third one is Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. So Greg, do you want to address the port responses to previous claims?
Sure. So at previous public meeting, there were a number of claims, and they're serious enough that we felt they deserve a response. So I'm just going to go over the claim and then followed by a response to the claim. So there was a claim that said the port is a completely unregulated entity and ED operates autonomously. So ports are highly regulated. See Title 53 of the Revised Code of Washington. And numerous regulations driven by other agencies at every level. Ports are subject to statutes and laws at the federal, state, county, and city level. Ports are audited by the state auditor's office and minimum every other year. The executive director does not act unless directed by the commission. On employee matters, the ED keeps the commission informed and provides information if matters rise to the level of potential litigation, compensation and benefit administration, or any matter that requires commission direction or action. The port does have statutory authority, and I would refer everyone to chapter 53.08 of the Revised Code of Washington. So there was a claim on port not representing people. Like many government entities, especially cities, counties, and special port, special districts like a port, the people are represented by elected officials. As such, these people take an oath of office and are charged with representing their electorate. The commissioners have to balance all the constituents' views and needs throughout the port district. Our port district has nearly 7,000 residents. One or more groups may want a certain direction, but a vote of a commission can accept, modify, or change that direction as elected representatives of all the electorate. Another claim on top property not usable. As many know, these properties were acquired before this commission and this committee were here. However, over the last several years, this property has been the subject of port and community planning. Look to this and see the Heartland study in 2017, stakeholder interviews in 2021. The top area was open to the public for some time, but in 2018, it was clear the port had added maintenance and liability with the open site. Trees were dangerous and open access created other issues, so considering the number of open spaces in the adjacent areas, namely Colo-Colo Park, Mike Wallace Park, and Arness Park, it was closed for an extended time as planning proceeded and to obtain a permit to remove those hazardous trees. All these properties are zoned residential. The Hill House has been rented since the port owned it. Residential zoning restricts the use of the property. So for the last couple of years, the port has worked to, one, get the bulk of port property rezoned to the same as the downtown Kingston area, which has been completed, and two, rezone the residential property to a similar commercial zone. And we're in the process of doing that. And it's in both alternatives at Kitsap County. Mm-hmm. Which is under discussion right now under the Kitsap Comprehensive Plan. So Hill House has gone to ruin, no standard of care, rent too low relative to a mortgage, and mortgage rates up, why not the Hill House to the same degree? So residential zoning restricts the uses of the property. Priorities and effort have over the past 3 years been focused on other assets. However, recent activity is focused on the structural integrity of the Hill House and potential use in a commercial setting, which assumes the rezone application is successful. The results are not yet completed. Any examination of rental houses will demonstrate that it is not possible to obtain monthly rent equivalent to a mortgage payment, even with a typical down payment. This is due to any number of factors, but condition and age of the structure is part of that, e.g. older building, less insulated structures require more cost to heat, for example. The rental market, even with newer homes, rent for less than the typical mortgage payments. It's basically the market. With regard to maintenance, issues with the house continue to be addressed, upgraded heating system, safety issues, and meeting health and safety standards. Mortgage is just a different market altogether. At first, the demand has been there. Because of its below market mortgage rates, Kingston has been a home for boats owned throughout the area, not necessarily from Kingston. Mortgage is a totally different market, and housing and expectations for similar treatment cannot be expected. The arguments for obtaining revenue to support the ever-increasing cost of the marina maintenance present another set of issues that need to be considered.
Greg, before you go on to the next one, could we go back to the previous one? The port has benefited substantially because the property, Koth property, has continued to appreciate since it was acquired.
Yes.
What does its appreciation actually do for the port?
So the appreciation one, it, the asset, just let's just say you wanted to sell the, if you needed cash and you wanted to sell the property, by the, through the appreciation, you're increasing the potential cash flow to the port. The second thing is it goes into our asset base for valuation of the port when you look at the balance sheet. And the third thing is the port uses its cash reserves. Cash reserves are held by Kitsap County. Kitsap County then in, Kitsap County then invests those reserves. So my understanding from previous port commission was they were sitting on cash reserves. The cash reserves were not giving much of a return. For the past, well, since I've been here, they were basically in the, we were making a, maybe a point and a half, 2 points. We weren't making hardly any money on the cash reserves. When you don't have many, much cash reserves, I guess it's not, it doesn't feel as painful. But as your cash reserves grow, it you're losing money basically as inflation impacts you and you're not getting a return on that cash. So what the previous port commission, and I applaud them for doing this, this property was adjacent and contiguous to the existing port assets. So they acquired that property is appreciated. So if the port decided, the port commission, future port commissions wanted to surplus it, which generally don't, you're making quite a return on that versus having it sit in cash reserves and making very, very little on it. I think that, the real estate market in Kingston has been appreciating really aggressively for the past 5+ years, 10 years. So that's the basic concept behind why they acquired that property. Also,
yeah, right.
The other thing that occurs, if you have property that's contiguous, let's say you want to develop property, now you have property that you can use as a buffer against if you have a different type of use. So, claims, so specific board has gone up over the last 3 years, 71%, while employee wages, particularly the EDs, have also gone up 71%. So this is apparently trying to convey this cause and effect. So the claimant's specific situation was not characterized accurately as to what actually occurred. His specific mortgage changed. He spoke to his mortgage, so that's what we're going to try to address here. The claimant got off the wait list in March 2020, occupied a 32-foot slip on C-Dock with a 36-foot boat, or close to. The claimant was not charged for the overhang of the slip, which is counter to the rules and regs. He was switched to a 36-foot slip on D-Dock in September 21 without being on the wait list. Both slips are covered mortgage. The slip length increased when the claimant was switched to D-Dock, and so the mortgage rate also increased. A 36-foot slip costs more than a 32-foot slip. This helps account for the differential quoted. The percent change, he claimed, does not reflect actual annual rate adjustments. The DDoC slip rate went up 36% during that four-year period, or an annual 9% annually on average. So the claim of 71% is false. The mortgage with the increase in slip length, which again also means an increase in mortgage rate, even if you include that in, went up 54% over the four-year period, even if you roll in the fact they have to pay more for a bigger slip. The employee payroll during that same four-year period from 2020 to 2023 went up 38%. The ED's compensation went up 26%. In 2018, employee compensation was far below market. When the positions were benchmarked by a compensation consultant, the associated increases were clearly needed to bring the port to market. So clearly, employee pay is not directly correlated with marina rates. Yes, everything has increased. But as the law requires, marina rates are connected to the fair market value, and the employee pay is connected to sound management and the port's compensation system, which is based on market data, years of experience, skill set, performance, and achievement of goals. Six, claim. Retirement for port employees is connected to wages, and former employees signed non-disclosure agreements. This is true in part, and false in part. The port operates under the state retirement system. Depending on the date the employee entered the system, different rules apply. J generally, retirement for all employees, they're enrolled in the PERS 2 program. The pension benefit is based on the following formula. 2% times your service credit years times average final compensation. That equals your monthly benefit. Service credit are the years of service, and average final compensation is the average of your 60 consecutive highest earning months in your career. As to non-disclosure agreements, the port does not execute those with former employees, as those would be inconsistent with the Open Public Meetings Act and Public Records Act. Further, any such agreement would need to be approved in open public session. Mm-hmm. So then there's a claim. The harbor master position has only had 2.33% raise over the last 4 years, while others at the port received 5 to 15% and the EE at 25%. First, the claim is false. The claim is based on information received from a public records request that asked for the base salaries and or hourly rate for staff. The total cash compensation for the harbor master should also include lump sum distributions and overtime. This information was not requested, however. Public record requests have to be taken literally. From 2018 to 2023, the harbor master's compensation has increased an average of 12% per year, with a total increase of 53%. The harbor master's average compensation for the 5 years was $111,670. In 2021, according to a salary survey, the harbor master was in the top 5 paid harbor masters for any public port. Only Everett, Seattle, Edmonds, and Olympia were paid more for this position. From 2019 to 2023, the executive director's compensation has increased an average of 8% per year, with a total increase of 35%. The ED's average compensation was $133,921. The ED's compensation is controlled by the commission. Claim, individual has been stifled by not getting information from public records requests. Public record requests are handled according to Chapter 42.56 of the Revised Code of Washington. And while the Washington State Attorney General's model rules on public disclosure, Chapter 44-14 of the WAC, provide practical non-binding advisory guidance, the staff responds as quickly as possible given the clarity and complexity of the request and staffing limitations. There is no allowance which would deliberately stifle obtaining public information. The business of the port still takes precedence. Another claim, an employee's illness may have been caused by the actions of the port and stress caused by the ED. To assume that job stress has caused an employee to fall ill is unwarranted in my view. Almost all human activity, and certainly almost all jobs, can cause stress. Sound management in almost all organizations requires accountability, which can involve deadlines and deliverables. That said, if stress were negatively affecting an employee, and that employee notified me, I would certainly try to take steps to mitigate the stress so that we have productive and happy employees. Employees also have avenues through employee assistance program, and I have no record of receiving any such reported stress by an employee. Claim. Harassment episode was followed by ED counseling conducted by a family friend. There has been no documented harassment episode which led to counseling. In the last 3 years, the harbor master reported to a member of the commission that the ED, in conversation, questions the lack of action by the commission on a specific issue. This led to the commission hiring a coach selected by the port's attorney to provide coaching for the ED. There was no family or other previous relationship with any port personnel. Claim. Planning for the port, referring to strategic planning kickoff meeting. Does the port ever ask for voter input? With reference to the October 9th, 2023 strategic planning session, only staff, commissioners, and 2 planning consultants were present. All assets were discussed, no decisions were made. A follow-up session is planned for the future to bring more focus on issues and shape a strategic plan. No plan has been prepared which has not received public comment opportunity. One of the people present at the session, namely Commissioner McClure, is a boat owner, has a slip in the marina, and is a member of the Kingston Cove Yacht Club. But KCYC is a tenant, an important tenant of the port, and as such, has opportunity to discuss issues with the port commissioners, management, and staff. As can be seen in the recent budget discussions, marina rates have been a central point of discussion over several public meetings. Also, staff has discussions with boarders every day. The port has poisonous roots in that ED and henchmen on the second floor commissioners have passed budgets that are discriminatory. The commissioners and the staff are dedicated to their roles. Budgets represent a balance of needs and desires among all port district voters and are undertaken and approved by their representative to the port commission. To claim that the actions of the commission and the staff are discriminatory is unjustified. Claims the port does not pay based on merit longevity in a fair manner, and the port has done none of those. Each position at the port has its corresponding pay grade and range. The range is established the minimum and maximum pay that employees can receive for performing jobs assigned to that particular position. The ranges were reviewed and confirmed by a third-party compensation expert. Each year, the port industry conducts a comprehensive market pricing study to determine existing pay and associated ranges. Port staff compensation is aligned with the external market, and adjustments are made when necessary to ensure that the pay ranges remain competitive. Employees are benchmarked within that range based on a number of factors, including performance, management of staff, skills, years of experience, and again, achievement of goals. Consistent with a total compensation philosophy, the board is committed to providing fair and competitive compensation program that attracts, retains, and rewards employees who support the board's mission and values. Commissioners have not studied or learned about the people you're regulating and the people in the port district. So first, the three port commissioners have lived in the district for a combined total of over 100 years. To our knowledge, this port meets more often in open session than any other port district of its size. For almost all of the last 5 years, meetings have been weekly. Each year, the commission meets for over 60 meetings, all of which are open to the public. These meetings have been and are opportunities for the commission to study, learn, and discuss port issues in depth. Also, port commissioners attend up to 4 conferences each year held by the Washington Public Port Association where training on port issues, regulatory requirements, and commissioner education occurs. This claim is without merit as it fails to recognize the extraordinary level of effort the commission exerts on an ongoing basis. There were some questions too. What does the port need with the residential property? Sell the property and use the money for other needs. This idea has been discussed, but not considered seriously, given the efforts to rezone this property from residential to commercial. A new set of uses will be available after this rezone, hopefully achieved in this county comprehensive plan update in 2024. Then the properties will be evaluated in this context. Port districts generally do not buy and sell assets. Ports buy and hold in perpetuity. Buying decisions are carefully considered to begin with and are strategic, not speculative. There was a question, it was a good question about why not use bonds to make future marina users pay? Bonds, loans, are typically used when there is a current need that cannot be made or paid with available funds. It is generally illegal to generate bond funds and bank them. The needs currently are maintenance and operations while building a capital account for future needs, such as float replacement, breakwater repair, or other large capital projects. Borrowing money increases costs for these projects. It is far better to pay as much as possible from existing funds. When bonds are issued, both existing and future customers will pay until the bonds are paid off. Keep in mind that all revenue sources can be used to pay bonds, so the same applies to all port district property owners and port tenants, marina or otherwise. The Port of Kingston has very limited bonding capacity. The port cannot bond our way to preserving and repairing the existing portfolio of assets, much less replacing them. Is access to the beach in the budget, and should it be? Currently, beach access is not in the budget and not in the capital plan, the 5-year capital plan. All the capital projects are in the capital plan currently or revised. Capital projects are prioritized in the following order: health and safety, revenue generating, and 3 discretionary. The port has considerable park-like property to maintain with no direct revenue generation. Again, balance is an objective during budget deliberations. So did past lawsuits cause marina rates to rise? Is the port totally dependent on marina rates? Well, lawsuits are not good for the port. In the past years, there have been several, all settled currently. While past lawsuits help draw down the port's bank accounts and suggest only good business practices should drive decisions in the future, marina rates were not adjusted because of the lawsuits. Instead, marina rates are driven by market conditions and based in part on marina to marina comparisons and the statutory requirement to charge fair market value per RCW 53. Why are some marina rates going down? Rates are not going down except the live aboard fee was slightly reduced this year. Why didn't the commission have time to review the budget? The commission decided to extend the public comment period specifically to ensure they took in additional information from moorage customers. The meetings are for the commission to deliberate. Why doesn't the commission communicate, have more meetings to discuss? The commission has met over 60 times annually, which to my knowledge is more than any other port commission. What are the basics of handling personnel? Review, discipline, pay. What can be public information given by the port? So generally speaking, personnel matters are confidential. However, some information is not. We are guided by the Public Records Act and legal authority as to what can be made available to the public, and we adhere to those authorities. Now that's it. That's the end of the comment.
This is very good. Thank you.
Does the commission have any comments?
I wanted to know if this is on the website or can be on the website.
Yep. It'll be part of the record.
I think that's a good idea.
I think going forward, this is a great idea. I appreciate all staff's work in pulling this together, because I think it's good when people do make public comments that we can bullet point address those public comments and move forward with it. I think that's really good, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's a lot of things that we've talked about at past meetings that have just been brought up today that, okay, we have talked about that. That's something that's been on our mind. That's something we've addressed. So it's really good to, I think, moving forward that we do this on a regular basis.
I do think doing this in the context of having public comment afterwards is really important, so that we know if this brought up any issues for people.
Well, that's why people can send, like what I said before, you know, if you have anything in addition, send it in writing to Chris. It'll be made part of the public record and we can address it.
And by that, you know, that if anyone does have a comment back to this, they can reference, see bullet point 3 in item 2 or what have you, you know, and then be able to, then we can receive that as well and understand what the comment is and address it further.
It gives staff time to address things too.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, because public comment is meant to be where we listen to the public make comment. And the rest of the meeting is supposed to be a transparent part where the public is actually listening to us have interaction with each other.
Yeah.
Since this is the only opportunity that we have to have interaction with each other.
Yeah.
That's what public meetings are meant to be.
Yeah.
And so to answer their questions, it makes a really hard way. Okay, yeah, you can have a back and forth, but then it just becomes an argument because it's a disagreement. So to me, it seems like the optimal way to address those would be through this.
Yeah, that's good.
I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with trying to write down a vague question that they have. and that having this followed by the public comment period at the end of the meeting would be helpful.
So we can discuss that.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's discuss that at our next work session, mm-hmm. how we're going to structure it. And maybe like we talked about with talking with Lena, if we decide to have her come in and talk to us, that might be something we could bring up with her too, in some way, shape, or form. Elena. Where did I come up with Elena? Anne.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Great.
So the next, any further discussion on this? Okay, so we'll move on to North Kitsap United.
Okay, so North Kitsap United is an initiative to develop a sports complex on property owned by Rainier and supported by their partners, including Kingston Rotary and YMCA. NKU partners have requested a letter of support from the Port of Kingston. The site is outside the Port District, yet the Port's mission is economic development, and this effort would promote economic development. With that, I hand it over to you and commissioners to discuss.
So at yesterday's meeting, go ahead, Mary, because you were talking about this yesterday.
I think it would be very helpful to weigh in on the county's actions in regards to this property. The original rezoning application was submitted way before this project was even under discussion. Mm-hmm. It's been said that Rainier got NKU involved in order to support their rezone application, but the actual sequence of events don't support that. Clint isn't here. All right. Yeah. I think letting the county know, to the extent that we are supportive of the project, that we are supportive of the project would be helpful. That was what I suggested yesterday that we do.
Mm-hmm. You have a comment, Steve?
The only comment I have in relation to the overall North Kitsap project, I think as far as the, I think we've made it clear we're very supportive of the economic development opportunity that this service would provide. But based on the zoning issue for that particular property, if you will, I don't know that we need to get in the weeds on that. I think we can generally say we are in support of the overall project for sure. I don't know how those things go together or whether or not Rainier has said that they really are requiring that combination of the rezone to happen with it. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think that they can stand alone on their own merit. The rezone could happen, and to me, if the rezone happens, then you know there would be what would be called a large lot development that would occur. It would be the same process for only 20 homes. You would have to do a large lot type of development to redefine where those parcels are in the scheme of things, and that would be through county permits, which, you know, in that particular case, it's its own project and its own merit, if you will. Mm-hmm. I think we've relayed as well that the benefit though to the public for citing this in a central area for all of North Kitsap, and also as a benefit to Port Commission, sorry, for the Port members, is definitely a benefit as well. And not only for economics for our area, because it will bring people and travelers to play on these fields, and then they'll, you know, use restaurants, nearby hotels, grocery stores, whatever, you know. It will be a definite stimulus to the economy in our area, which is our charge.
Right.
I do think it is a little unrealistic to suggest that Rainier would donate the property and do all of the environmental and mitigation and transportation infrastructure at their cost, not ours, ours being NKU. So I don't know that I agree with that, Steve.
Well, if it came to that, because of my regular job, what I would do if we do end up with a resolution to specifically support the rezone, I would just simply recuse myself. So that would be, you know, prudent, and you know, that would be its standalone procedure. That's what I would just say as a public employee of indirectly with the port, but also, you know, with my fiduciary responsibility and my responsibility at work. Being the county SEPA coordinator, I will probably be signing a document based on a SEPA decision that would occur for the overall project too. So
it wouldn't be appropriate.
It would not be appropriate, and I think that that's, you know, saying in front of our public.
Yeah, it's true.
that's true. What I would do. So if it comes to that.
So I don't think that, my understanding is that they're not necessarily asking for a resolution, they're asking for a letter.
Yes.
They're asking for a letter, and that based on what that letter said would decide whether or not you were comfortable with signing that letter.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, 'cause I think we all kind of feel the same way that we, you know, we like this idea.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, it's a benefit.
It will be a benefit for our community.
But definitely. Yet, you know, there are some issues surrounding you, and we want to respect those issues. Mm-hmm. That might be something that maybe figure out what exactly they're looking for in this letter. Do we have those parameters?
That would be helpful.
Yeah. Yes, and I was going to draft it.
Why they want a letter from the Port of Kingston, just so we understand.
Thank you. Because the Port of Kingston has expressed earlier on that interest in helping the project in some way that was appropriate. And the fact that this has obvious economic development benefits for Kingston and North Kitsap, that falls within our purview.
It's perfectly normal for an entity to, when they're involved in a big project like this, to reach out to other entities in the area and ask for their support in some way, shape, or form, especially by letter, and which we would not be doing. This is not a resolution. This isn't a resolution. This would be a letter. So maybe if we, like I said, we define what actually is needed in that letter,
yeah.
And then we would talk with Steve and see if we could make it in a way that would be, that you'd be able to sign.
Is this an emotional support letter?
So we can't, we can't take public comment right now, okay? Okay, I'm sorry. We're trying, okay. Okay, so does that sound like a plan moving forward with this? Is everybody comfortable with that?
I really appreciate Commissioner McClure bringing this up too, because it's helpful to have this kind of discussion. It's complex, and I appreciate your, you know, your understanding.
I'm worried about this for 4 or 5 days before our meeting, thinking, is this going to be a challenge for Steve?
Yeah.
How do we possibly present it
that
essentially says, we're not talking here about the rezone per se,
yeah.
We're talking about the overall benefits of the total project as it's evolved to the community and North Kitsap.
Yeah.
And so I have all those parameters. I can easily draft up what I think might work so that you can take a look at it and you can take a
and
look
and share
at
it with staff so that we can.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. We can.
We'll get the letter.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. So what did you just mean when you said we'll get the...
You send the information over.
Great. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I knew what you were saying.
So is there anything more on North Kitsap United? Any further discussion?
I hope everyone goes to the meeting tonight.
The meeting tonight will, I think there's a lot of really good information they provided. I did attend about 3 weeks ago, I think it was. And I thought the information that they provided was pretty good, so.
Okay, so we're gonna move on to the discussion about the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. We all got the emails in reference to that. Greg, go ahead.
So the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan process, it's in full swing. And KCAC, which is the Kingston Community Advisory Council, is meeting to discuss their position with regard to specific elements and recommendations, and whether to, and including whether or not to support some of the Port of Kingston recommendations. So some of the questions that KCAC, which they put out in the email, thanks Beth Berglund's on here, so thanks Beth. Some of the questions that they are putting out to have discussed are, which alternative map, two or three, does the majority support? And number one, the alternative one is no action. Number two is compact growth, and alternative three is dispersed growth. I submitted a link to so you guys could access the some of the information there for the alternatives. Looking at the map, it's not very easy to decipher that. So I've attached they have a narrative about alternative action number one, two, and three, and exactly the elements involved in it. The county's website is very good, easy to navigate. So that would be one thing. Which alternative would the Port of Kingston, what would you want to represent? Two, what max building height is the majority comfortable with in the part of downtown Kingston closest to the water? 45 feet with a setback or 55 feet? So Eric Baker at Kitsap County, they had put forward that they were gonna talk about going to a 55 foot height limit. And we would support that if you're trying to increase the densification. And also the financials work better off of it. And generally what you do is you're gonna have some residential component in a mixed use building where the residential basically is subsidizing the parking, underground parking requirement or below ground or parking requirement, which is a loser. And then basically where they make money is in the middle part of the development. So you have to look, and commercial, you know, generally requires higher ceilings, and then even if it's, you know, retrofitted, you're going to have those have the ceiling. So as you go to the height limit, then basically you're going to have, it's going to be a little bit more attractive for commercial use. Also, again, you got to provide more residential capacity to create demand for businesses. And it also provides a significant advantage to attract developers and tenants because you're not going to attract capital unless it's got a good return on it. And that that changes the, any developer will tell you that changes the math. And it also could help the marina by providing more demand for slips. And then three, does the majority want a requirement for commercial use on the first floor? Or do we want to provide flexibility in the storefront overlay, UBC, part of downtown Kingston? And this is, so I think this is the biggest difference between what I would say some of the KCAC members and the port. The port wants to require some retail frontage through the downtown area, like a storefront district along Main Street and along First. So, and then the question was, well, how deep does that retail have to really be? So you guys have already come down, you already said, okay, let's reduce the depth of the retail requirement, but there has to be some retail. Otherwise, you're walking around and you're looking at condominiums and apartments. So you're walking up and down the street and there's no retail or commercial necessarily. The argument is that, hey, as you increase the residential, it'll automatically backfill in with commercial. That's not what we're hearing from, let's say, Charlie Wenslow. He's said that repeatedly, and other developers and people I've reached out to. They said, obviously, it's not going to be retrofitted to commercial. That's really not accurate. That's not been their experience. They said, look, when you rent it out to an apartment or condominium, you're not going to suddenly kick out the apartment or condominium, your tenants, in order to then put a whole bunch of money back in to get less of a return for commercial use. So I guess that's the bottom line. That's kind of the recommendation.
Plus, I think if you retrofit to, say a restaurant or something like that, then the infrastructure for a restaurant with cooking facilities and vents and all that is just remarkable.
Yeah. And then they did also mention view corridors. View corridors aren't really established in the code. The existing design you guys already accommodated for any view corridors. That's the whole reason why the buildings were separated out. The whole thing was designed around trying to preserve views. But obviously, you have to look, it's a natural amphitheater when you look. So as you get up to the top of the hill and coming down, you're at the very bottom, which is where Port property is, and where that downtown area is, it's not going to be necessarily as impairing the views to the extent. That's why they did that 3D animation that they could walk you through, so you could actually see what the viewpoint is for a pedestrian and different people. So they're trying to illustrate that the views aren't necessarily impaired any more than they would be whether you had a four-story or a five-story. It's not going to be a big difference. So I guess those are the things for the commission for you to discuss and ponder. I think you should attend the meeting. Mm-hmm. If you want to speak independently, not take an action or anything, but if you want to have a consolidator, if you just want to reinforce what your existing position is, or if you modify your views, you should discuss this.
Yeah.
And whatever you direct me to do, then that's I can speak on your behalf too if you want.
And as I understand, that meeting is the 31st, which is this next Wednesday at 4:00 via Zoom.
So are they taking comment there, or this is just an information meeting?
This, as I understand, this is a straw poll.
What do you mean by straw poll?
Of that particular group. They are making a recommendation to the county.
Oh, the KCAC is making a recommendation.
Directly from KCAC.
Oh, okay.
Some matters in KCAC are co-signed as us being the ex officio. So if we have a differing viewpoint, I might suggest that our differing viewpoint wouldn't necessarily have our signature on that document.
Well, there's only three things that we have
put forward.
That we put forward that weren't in agreement with what KCAC put forward.
Yeah.
Other than that, we were pretty in line with what they said. So there's just those three things that we were.
And just this corridor as well that Greg had said, it's down, it's Main and First. Yeah.
And it doesn't even include the Washington Boulevard property that goes across the frontage. It's just really the Main and First.
Right. It's not the side streets.
No.
So I know I personally still feel the same way I did when we first submitted this.
Yeah.
That I feel strongly about the three things that we were in support of.
Yeah.
Have you guys... Yeah, I mean, the people that I've talked to that I've, Like I said, I've talked to people.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
And not in church. But I talk to people.
Yeah, everyone I talk to has said the same thing. It's like, why would you get rid of the potential for downtown?
Right.
Where we have businesses now. They could come in for a permit right now with a group of landowners, and they could right now change the whole downtown core to
apartments.
To apartments, and it's allowed right now
in
the code with the use table changes that occurred from 2018.
So how...
I don't think we have a thriving town, if I could further elaborate. I do not think we'd have a thriving community if we get rid of the ability of businesses to be retained in this area of the town. I think we would lose our town. We would turn it to condos, and you know, it'd be big money makers for whoever owned those properties. But I don't really feel that that is right, and I feel very strongly about it.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. But I do have concern about the requirement for the storefront overlay, et cetera. I guess my sense is that if property owners don't want to allow for either build to commercial requirements now or plan for it in the future, I'm uncomfortable saying that they have to do additional construction with potential commercial development in the future allowed, you know, allowed for or required. Because the back several years ago, the last cycle when they had the committee that included Jett and Bavarnik and
Dave Wetter,
et cetera, et cetera. I was involved. I wasn't a member of the committee, but I was there for all of the meetings, and it was very compelling that if market is there, you'll get businesses. You can't make businesses happen. And so I'm really concerned with that requirement that there be the that people be required to provide for business development over time.
So when you talk to architects and developers, but if you look at municipalities, so you look at Bainbridge Island, they require just on Main Street only, and Paulsville, just on Main Street only, commercial space on the storefront zone.
In effect. On the bottom floor, right?
Yeah, so it's only, so as soon as you get off of that Main Street, which is kind of what this proposal is, that's what we put forward, is as soon as you're outside of those two roads, now it's all optional.
Right.
So it's really only, and they're currently commercial and retail. So it wouldn't be a change of use. And hopefully then the permitting is much easier at the county, to be frank. If you don't change the use, it should be very simple for businesses to keep those current uses and also to attract somebody else in. I think in the current environment, though, it's very true that there's more vacancy, and you've had COVID, and you know, then you know, in some places around the country, it's riots, and they damaged the storefront zone on Main Street. So now you see them being rebuilt and reestablished, but that's the fundamental argument from some people, is that you have to require it. You want to say, this is going to be our Main Street. If you don't require it, the financial incentive is like clear that you would go to residential. It's not even a It's not even like maybe you would want to go to residential. You're going to make more money on residential than you will on commercial. And you have, frankly, you can have less risk. And you know, it's just a better business all the way around. But if you wanted to have a downtown, preserve a downtown, require it. So all the other property, as you go up 104, all of that is open to redevelopment, where they would have to have the first floor have certain things built into it, but it would be optional. They can just do completely condominiums and residential. It's just whether on the main street, so you preserve some part of Kingston, and you're going to say, I want to have a main street here or not. Like I said, Paulsville and Bainbridge both do it. They're cities, you know, they incorporate it. And it's really like on Paulsville, as if you know Paulsville and you go through Paulsville and you go past the bakery, you're going to take a right to Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. That's it. It stops right there. It's not required beyond that.
Yeah.
So if you look, there's a development right there. When you take a right, there's a brand new development across from Wells Fargo Bank. That's just all residential. There's no requirement in there. So they have just this area that they require in order to preserve that downtown. That's what they feel is important. So that's kind of what we're grappling with. And if it's not in the code, then you know, the argument is from other people, you know, some of whether it be Charlie or other people, was that, well, it probably will become residential.
I remember we had, go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to mention that Beth had a comment.
Oh,
she's
here
on
we go.
Zoom. So I don't, can
but
you see
but that's a
that?
Comment, so.
A comment.
Not hearing.
In, I think it's what you're
used to. Sharing
information.
Yeah, we're well aware, yeah.
At the February meeting.
Can't take public comment.
It's up for viewing then.
We will view it. Yeah.
Thank you, Beth.
So that really is, that's the bottom line, a difference between the two perspectives.
So I remember us going over and figuring out how many lots that it actually affected and how many vacant lots it actually affected. There was just, there were very few that were vacant that hadn't already been developed, and most of them have ground floor commercial.
I think people would be surprised that there's already a large assemblage of one owner that has recently purchased not only the building where the crepe shop is, but you go all the way up the block, and every one of those properties is owned by one corporation now. They could totally turn that around into all residential, and they could do it right now with today's code. And all they have to do is build a commercial standard on the ground floor. So there goes half of town right there with one owner. It's already an owner that could do that. So.
What's really the point of requiring convertibility, in that if nobody's converting, what's the point of requiring it?
Good point.
I think Charlie would argue that it gives a false sense of security, that you think that it would get converted over to commercial. So he would say it sounds good, but the actual effect of when you attract investment or developers, it's not going to have many teeth. And that's not to say that there isn't some possibility, I guess, but he would say, and other developers I talked to, they say it's a remote possibility to get it converted down the road eventually.
We have a couple places here in downtown that have gone from business to residential to business to residential mm-hmm. to business to residential that I can think of in my mind. There's a couple.
With homes, I think it's a little different. I mean, mm-hmm. when you have a home business, right? But when you're talking about redeveloping, it's, you know, you're going to put in an apartment complex or something like that. They're not going to retrofit. You know, some of these homes are pretty old or whatever. They're not going to retrofit some of those houses to be.
Well, they can't. They couldn't. Well, it'd be difficult because the commercial building standard and the residential building standard are completely different standards. So
that's, right.
That's precisely why they're requiring the commercial building standard on that ground floor, then up and above, Obviously, you still have to do fire flow and that type of thing as well, but you know, those other design criteria, you know, you have the Kingston design standards, you still have to do that. But the fact is that the code today is that you could do all residential and just have to do that commercial standard on the base. And that's what the recommendation thus far is, to essentially not change that, but theoretically go an additional height. I don't know. I felt like it was also important to provide a carrot as well to developers that say if they are going to incorporate a first floor, ground floor, even outside of this area, I felt it was important to relay that if they want to go up to 55 feet, do commercial on the bottom floor. I felt that was important, but I think that flexibility, that rest of that group, you know, didn't want to do that. I felt that was something that was a nice carrot instead of a stick, but you know.
It definitely changes the financials. John Rose has said, there's no question, anybody that's a landowner is considering development. They said, absolutely, no question. And we talked to, we spoke with like Roar Elmquist. He helped working with MRJ and some of the business owners over on Bainbridge and other places. He's done development downtown. He said, there's no question that the financials are far more attractive if you add a floor. I mean, it just changes it significantly, especially, you know, because the other thing that we recommended was also relaxing the parking requirement, mm-hmm. because, and then the stormwater is hopefully being addressed on these parcels now with the, mm-hmm. the county. It's not going to address everything in the basin, but it addresses a fair amount of it. So some of the big barriers that came out of that 2016 discussion, some of the biggest ones, I think, was the parking requirement and how they calculate parking. And then also the stormwater was just really, really onerous. But the other issue you got to think about is that if you don't get a bite of the apple now they're going to a 10-year cycle with the county for a review of your comprehensive plan.
Right.
It's not a 6-year
yeah.
cycle anymore.
Yeah. So this is it for 10 years, essentially, in 2024. So that was the other concern I had with it, too. So, but.
A lot can happen in 10 years.
That's for sure.
So is there something needed on our part? Was the county asking for input in some way, shape, or form?
Well, I think it's important that the port, you communicate if there is any differences or change or movement on what our position is, then we should communicate that and also have a discussion. I think it's worth it to hear what KCAC, if you mm-hmm. attend the KCAC mm-hmm. meeting,
right.
that you hear what the thought process is.
Exactly.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, they put a lot of thought and time into it. And there's different people. It's funny, I'm not seeing as many developers in the discussion, but maybe they're behind the scenes talking about things. But there was more developers at the table in 2016, 18. It just seems like to me, at least the meetings I went to, you know, John Rose was in it, Rick Lanning, other people, they were at the table. So even the things that we're actually supporting are, I think, also super beneficial to these landowners in the area. Even if you wanted to, let's say there's a lot of people, I reached out to a number of people that own property in the area. I asked them if they wanted to sell any of the property. Just out of curiosity, just curious, are you in the market to potentially sell? Nobody was interested in selling, almost for any reason. And even though they didn't really necessarily have any plans for redevelopment, and that's a tough thing too. So you have to try to create incentives to make it more attractive for investment.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, there's an incentive to just sit on the assets and not worry about it.
Yeah, and basically take the, you know, the
rental income,
the rental income, and then whatever depreciation that is rolled in through your tax advisor too. So that's, you know, up to them.
So we have some time to actually. Mm-hmm. think about this mm-hmm. and to come back, and we could probably put it on our next work session too, to bring it back up again. so that we have more time to talk about it.
So the January 31 meeting, that's KCAC discussing all of this.
It's a KCAC subgroup, their Land Use and Environment Subcommittee.
Well, I'd like to pick this back up again right after that meeting.
What
day is that?
Exactly.
Well, our next work session after
When's our next work session, Chris?
Can I advise you of a date?
Yes, please.
The county requires input
Thank you.
On the EIS part of this plan.
Right.
We just extended it from the 31st of January to the 7th of February.
February, right.
Okay.
So in relationship to your meetings, your decisions and input is needed on the EIS part.
Yep.
Thank you. Okay.
And is that all on their website?
Yeah.
Do you know more?
It is on the this.
Okay.
It's in here.
There's some dates.
So when's our next work session?
Let's see.
February 6th.
Yes.
Okay.
February 6th.
We should probably then, if we're going to want to take action on that, then that should probably become a special meeting.
That's what I'm thinking,
so
too.
So that we can take action on that.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And maybe Steve can tell you, is the height thing part of the EIS, or is the height thing not subject to that 7 February?
I have not looked at that. I don't know.
We will figure that out. For sure.
That's a good question.
Okay, we're going to move on to commissioner reports. I don't have anything at this time. Do Mary or Steve, do you guys have anything?
Nope, I think we've already talked about the things I was interested in.
Yeah, I think we rolled into things we've been involved in, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, good discussion, guys.
Yeah, was good.
Staff reports?
I have nothing at this time.
Tori bailed, okay. So our next regular meeting is going to be Wednesday, February 28th, 2024 at 6:30 p.m. It's going to be here at the Village Green. Can someone tell me what time it is?
It is
2:30. 2:29.
2:29. So can I have a motion to adjourn at 2:29?
Before we adjourn, I think we have to have a point of correction on the statements that Greg read.
Can you submit that, please, in writing? Because we're not doing a public comment period right now.
It was a public comment.
We're not doing a public comment period right now. We're adjourning the meeting.
You impugned me.
Can I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Right?
I so move we adjourn the meeting.
I am, before I second that, I want to, how are we going to go about getting reaction on all the stuff?
That's what public comment period is for.
I mean, I think we've relayed as well is that we have a response to many of the requests. We've made it clear that we would like any further response of that in an email that people can send so we can deliberate on it.
You
look at it for next
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
So
you made a statement which was false.
Can I make just a small suggestion?
Can we wait till we adjourn the meeting, please? Can you adjourn the meeting, Mary? Can you second that?
I second that with some hesitation, as you know.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So if this adjourn now, can I make some
suggestions? Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea to let us get a response to you, not a debate, but at least a response. Because one of the things you guys said to us is you can only talk during these meetings.
Yep.
There was some hesitation, I think, two, three meetings ago, so bear with me, about that you guys haven't had time.
Mm-hmm.
And but, sometimes you need to hear something, not to debate it, but a correction when it happens, when it's fresh. So we make sure you guys are hearing us and that you understand what it's specifically about. Because what happens is it's these responses, you're going to have to go back and forth, and it's going to take a really long time. You've already said it. Your time is precious.
It is.
By not letting us have at least a rebuttal period, just where these are things we want to point out, we'll follow up with email, but to be fresh, so you can understand what's coming and what point of reference it is during the meeting, would be a lovely compromise.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that fact. I totally do. What I would like to see is that we also have people, we are always available to talk to people privately outside and answer questions and take down things
right,
that we can respond to.
And his answer, if you guys can't meet unless it's in a meeting and
right.
we've got your attention,
uh-huh.
we're gonna get, you're gonna have, you might have two different viewpoints because you're on two different pages, maybe in the same chapter, but completely two different pages. I'm gonna get two different answers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just give us a minute or two to say, these are the things that we just heard, we'll rebutting so you know the point of reference in the meeting, and then we'll follow up in an email. And I think that is a fair compromise.
That would have to be a public comment period during the meeting.
But I'm just saying, if you can give us a small limited amount saying, is there anything that's going to be rebut, point it out now, follow up in an email.
I think the word rebut is
argumentative
and not really a comment. I think
right.
that what would be beneficial, I was actually surprised. To be honest, I was surprised we didn't have a second public comment period in the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what we might do as a commission is bring that up in our next special session,
mm-hmm.
which is coming up.
That's exactly.
And I like your argument, your discussion about it for sure.
I just wanted
yeah.
to approach you, Andrew, since there wasn't a second. You
yeah.
put that big because there
yeah.
are things. I'm happy to send you an email.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I need all of your attention saying, this is what I heard, because maybe I heard it wrong and I need all three of you and I don't
uh-huh.
want to get into a back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's better
exactly.
to have all three here. Say, you know, for example, when Greg was giving his report, he made a comment about, and bear with me because it's the way I heard it, is that doing these projects will help with demand on the marina, for rental demand. And the way I'm hearing that is, well, wait a minute, I just heard him say there was such a demand for the rental of the boats. That's why our rates got raised. Do we not have a demand? Could you understand how that could be a very conflicting
oh, I
thing
see what you're
to
saying.
Hear?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
when I hear things like that, I want to bring it to your attention because one, you can correct, say, no, he means something a little bit different. Then I'm going to be a little, oh, okay, there's not an email. Or two, hey, there's something conflicting here and we need to
right.
see
iron
what's
it
going
out.
On.
Yeah.
Right? Iron that out. And
yeah.
So I would prefer that afterwards. Don't have to have a resolution, but we can at least point out there's some contention, there's something not being communicated here well
mm-hmm.
that we all need to discuss. And I need to have personally all three of you guys say, okay,
yeah.
I know what point. So when we're in this email exchange with
yeah.
each other,
yeah.
Yeah.
we all have that saved reference.
Yeah, yeah, that's
because
good.
Because if not, we get certain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
May I make a comment? Just a point of correction. When Greg, when you read the report and you talked about my vote moving from C to D,
uh-huh.
okay, you made an assumption that I was talking about my mortgage rates, and the assumption was incorrect.
Okay.
My percentage that I put out to the group was 71%, and it's exactly correct. And I invite you to do the math.
Okay.
You know how to do it. If you look at the 2019 mortgage rate for a DDoC non-covered. It is $6.40. The 2023 rates are at $10.95. That is a 71% increase.
Okay.
Well, I invite you to do the math. You related that directly to me. Indirectly, you didn't mention my name, but everyone knows that I'm the one that brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That math is correct.
Okay, well, why don't we do this? We'll get our math, exactly how it was calculated. I'll look at exactly what you're saying in terms of your calculation, and we'll compare the two.
So it's right here in the schedule.
I understand, but he hasn't seen how we calculated either.
Pull out your calculator.
Oh, we're going to, you guys are going to get together and talk
yeah.
about it. It's not going to be an argument, okay?
I don't want it to be an argument.
Let's get together.
I was impugned by the statement. I want it corrected. I mean, you basically said I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. You made an assumption that it was incorrect.
Why don't you get with Greg's numbers?
Yeah.
He can get with your numbers.
No.
You guys can come together.
$10.95 subtract $6.40. Divide that number by $6.40. Multiply it by 100. It will come up with 71.09%, which is the accurate amount. If you're going to impugn somebody, make sure you're correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was recorded. Here you go, Chris.
So we need a lesson on how to
use it. I got it now.
You haven't figured
it
out?
Yes, I do. I've got it figured out.
It's that.
You press stop.